Hare Krishna. So we are very happy that this evening, for the next 3 days now also, we have His Holiness Niranjan Swami Maharaj. Maharaj is a very senior disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and he spent several years distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, and was also temple president in Boston. And in the 80s, he began spreading the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu book distribution in East Europe, Soviet Union, and last many years he's been the GBC for one of the very successful communities in ISKCON at Ukraine, and every year they have an amazing festival where more than 5,000 to 6,000 devotees gather, and they have ecstatic kathas and kirtans for 4 to 5 days. And Maharaj has also been involved in initiating wonderful programs on devotee care, and he has published a book also on that and gives seminars connected to devotee care. And for today evening, like we were discussing a couple of days ago, what would be a good topic, and one of the topics he also speaks on is based on Srila Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita, controlling the urge to speak. So this seminar, beginning today and going on for the next 2 days, is titled Patiently Pursuing the Goal, Controlling the Urge to Speak. And I think all of us need help on that. So Maharaj has appeared as the transcendental doctor and is going to give us some real solid consultancy and also the powerful medicine. And I also request Sri Dhamma Prabhu to speak some things based on his very close interactions with Maharaj, and also
I can't. After I hear you, I may be able to control. Hare Krishna, and just very fortunate to really serve Maharaj in a very small way in this very successful Ukraine Yatra. And actually, Maharaj has practiced what he's going to speak about today. He has patiently waited for many, many years without much speaking. But by his actions, he has shown a most wonderful example for a very successful Ukraine Yatra. And I mean, we have so much preaching happening in Europe and other places. But for example, in the Sunday Feast program in Ukraine, there are maybe more devotees, or at the most equal devotees, as Radha Gopinath Temple. And the way they invite the newcomers is such an elaborate process. So the thing I'm trying to just convey is that because of Maharaj's leadership, because of a very, very concerning and very, very loving leadership that he has been there, and he has empowered the devotees. The whole community is a community filled with loving devotees, and the way it is flourishing. The first I went was in 2003. There would be close to say 100 to 120 devotees coming for the Sunday Feast program. I'm 2003, and now every year on year we go there, and now it is close to 600, 700, 800 devotees, jam packed. And the amazing thing is, not a single Indian. They're all local Ukrainians. Nothing against Indians, but and nothing against Indians, but many places out of India, we see devotees who are coming are Indian origin. So they want to come for Sunday Feast. But Ukraine, you will not find a single Indian. They're all local Ukrainians. So, you know, they are taking up to Krishna consciousness amazingly well. And some of the very, very, qualified people of the society are coming. And Maharaj is doing amazing service. So it is very great fortune that he's here. And we are all so happy to be taking advantage of this wonderful presentation he's going to make. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So let us again very wholeheartedly with this understanding welcome with much more intensity from our deep core of our hearts Niranjan Swami Maharaj in our midst by loudly chanting Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! Thank you.
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unminitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. going to speak this evening from essays written by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur on the verses from Upadeshamrita. And these are 12 essays she given in Sri Bhakti Loka on the two verses which describe the six activities which are unfavorable for the development and devotional service and the six activities which are favorable. We're going to be speaking from the essay this evening about dhaira, or patience. And I believe the topic is patiently pursuing the goal, controlling the urge to speak. Is that one? Yes. That's fine. So we're going to put together, based on this essay and another essay that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written in the same book, and speak about this topic of patience, which is a very relevant topic for practitioners of bhakti yoga, especially since these essays by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur are specifically addressed, and many times throughout his essays he says, O sadhakas. He's speaking specifically to those who are practitioners of bhakti yoga, who are engaged in sadhana, and who have or who are aspiring to achieve the goal of their sadhana, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur also explains in this essay about patience, what that goal is. Presents it in a very interesting way. And in order to achieve that goal, which I'll soon explain while reading from this, in order to achieve that goal, one has to be very patient. Patience, of course, is something that it's a virtue. And Rupa Goswami gives it as something which is essential if one wants to advance in bhakti, because especially in modern times, our tendency is that we want things very quickly. And oftentimes, devotees in the execution of their sadhana, being impatient, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that sometimes they abandon sadhana because they're not sufficiently patient. And he presents it in a very profound way. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. And the first time I spoke from this section, I realized that it's very profound in the way Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains what patience is. So rather than introducing the whole topic, I'll begin and read, and then as you'll see that these things will unfold while we read and as we try to explain them in the way that our previous acharyas have introduced the topic. So, as we said, the chapter is called Dhaira, or Patience. For the practitioner of devotional service, Dhaira, patience, is extremely necessary. Those who possess the quality of Dhaira are called dhira, sober. Due to lack of this quality, men become restless. Those who are impatient cannot do any work. by the quality of Darya, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. Explanation is required. Well, maybe it's not required. You might even know the material better than I do. But I'll try to explain it according to my understanding, especially one confusing word here is which sometimes when people hear it, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that those who are impatient cannot do any work. But we should remember who he's addressing. So he's not specifically saying that those who are impatient can't get in their cars or can't get on the train in the morning and go to work. Or they can't, you know, sit in rush hour traffic, in Bombay traffic for 3 hours. They might be impatient, but they'll do what they need to do to go to work. So obviously, because this essay is being addressed to sadhakas, he's not talking about this kind of work. He's specifically speaking about internal work. And those who are impatient, it's very difficult for them to do the internal work required to achieve the goal, which is, he delineates, and I'll jump ahead, because he delineates that goal, and I should establish the goal probably right from the very beginning. I think it would be helpful to know what is the goal that we have to be patient in trying to achieve. So he summarizes at the end what this goal is. He said, there is another meaning applicable to the word dhyaya. Those who engage in sadhana desire to attain the results. Karmis hope to attain heavenly happiness by fruitive activities. Jnanis hope to attain liberation by speculative knowledge. And devotees, they also want some fruit. Well, this may sound contradictory to our understanding of Vaishnava Siddhanta, but actually, I think I might have quoted this even yesterday, that the fruit that the devotee wants, and he says here, the goal, he says this, devotees hope to please Krishna by their devotion. That is the fruit. That is their goal. But being impatient, due to prolonged sadhana, some people fall from the path to the ultimate goal. Therefore, he defines patience means, as he says, therefore, a practicing devotee who desires to achieve his goal attains that result only when he becomes patient. Quote, Krishna must be merciful to me either today or after 100 years or in some other birth. I will take shelter of his lotus feet with determination and never leave. This type of dhyaya, patience, is most desirable for the practitioners of devotional service. So that is the goal, and that is how a devotee should think in when endeavoring to achieve this goal. The goal is that, just as the karmis, they want some fruitive gain. Jnanis, they have a goal, which they perform their sadhana. They want liberation through speculative knowledge. And devotees, they want Krishna to be pleased by their devotion. And as we quoted yesterday, there's evidence in Shastra that this may not necessarily be so easy to obtain, Krishna's pleasure. And we quoted the verse by Prahlad Maharaj where he says, oh my friends, you cannot please the Supreme Person. Actually he says, oh my friends, oh sons of demons. He's speaking to his classmates. Oh my friends, oh sons of demons. You cannot please the Supreme Personality of Godhead even if you become expert Brahmins or you become advanced in etiquette or vast learning. Nor by austerities, by great sacrifices, by acceptance of vows, nor by chastity. none of these things will awaken the pleasure of the Lord. The Lord is pleased only when one has unflinching, unalloyed devotion to Him. Without sincere devotional service, everything else is simply a show. So this is evidence that getting Krishna's pleasure, I mean, if you think about it, unflinching, unalloyed devotional service is the only way to get his attention, or to speak, to obtain his pleasure. Because he says, without unflinching, unalloyed devotional service, it's a show. And what he's saying is that Krishna's not looking. So if you're doing it with some other motive, you're not getting Krishna's attention, so you must be doing it for getting somebody else's attention. Because Krishna does only looks when there's unflinching, unalloyed devotional service. So that's getting his attention, what to speak about getting his pleasure, his satisfaction, to the point where, of course, Krishna's manifestation of his pleasure with his devotees is he derives great pleasure from his devotees. There's another verse in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam which says, the Supreme Lord is very dear to those devotees who have no material possessions, but who are fully satisfied in possessing only devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Indeed, the Lord relishes the activities of such devotees. That's how he gets his pleasure. Those whose only interest, only possession they want to have is devotional service to Krishna. Of course, when Narada Muni says they have no material possessions, we understand from this verse that doesn't mean that they don't have possessions, but they're not material in that a devotee who sees everything as coming from the Lord and utilizes everything for the service of the Lord and is always fixed in his consciousness, he has no material possessions. And as we know, there are examples of devotees who had great wealth, but they were great devotees. But the wealth, which is attractive to Krishna, that wealth is the wealth of devotion or love that the devotee has within his heart, and that's what Krishna considers to be most valuable. And therefore he says in Bhagavad Gita, if you offer me a leaf, flower, fruit, and water with love, I'm pleased by that love, and therefore I'm inclined to accept it. That's evidence of his pleasure when he accepts. So, obtaining Krishna's pleasure may not necessarily be the easiest thing to obtain by our efforts alone. And therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, sometimes devotees who are endeavoring to achieve that goal, they have to be patient. Because you may not get that evidence so quickly. You may get some evidence, obviously, when the spiritual masters plead, Yasya Prasada Bhagavat Prasado, Yasya Prasada Nagantikatopi. Of course, we understand the spiritual masters pleased, then it's indicative of Krishna's pleasure. But Lord Chaitanya also gave evidence by his own example what was really pleasing to his spiritual master. What does the spiritual master want most as an offering from his disciple? What will please him the most? Certainly the spiritual master is pleased when the disciple follows his instructions, offers something to him with love, and endeavors with steadiness in order to try to please him. These things are all pleasing to him. But Lord Chaitanya gave the evidence that actually Ishwara Puri, his spiritual master, was most pleased when he manifested the symptoms of ecstatic love by chanting the holy name of the Lord. So, of course, what will really please his spiritual master, what really pleases the devotee who's making all efforts to give Krishna to those who are in need of Krishna. What really pleases him is when he sees that the devotee has actually achieved the fruit of what he's come to offer. That obviously makes the spiritual master very pleased. And of course, that devotional service is something which satisfies the Lord. And it, so much so that that devotee becomes recognized by the Lord. That's, even Lord Brahma prays to Krishna. He says, I pray that whether in this life or some future life, you'll recognize me as your devotee. That is how he prays. Whatever it may be, whether I go, or it be here or in some other planet or some other engagement, someday I pray that you'll recognize me as your devotee. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur therefore says, and understandably so, that in order to achieve this level of pleasure from the Lord, one has to be patient. And what is the patience? The devotee has to think that someday I will get Krishna's mercy. Someday it will come. Whether it's now, whether it's 10 years from now, whether it's 100 years from now, or whether it's in some other birth, I will get Krishna's mercy. And therefore, patience means that I will never give up his lotus feet, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. This type of patience, that means it may not be instant, immediate. It may not be after 10 years. It may not be after 30 years. It may not be after this lifetime. It may be after some future life. But a devotee has to think that way. And of course, when a devotee thinks that way, when he actually thinks that way, when he's ready to tolerate and accept whatever inconveniences will come to him, whatever difficulties may come to him, whatever apparent lack of mercy is manifest in his life, when a devotee is ready to accept that because of his firm faith that he will get that mercy someday, Krishna can reduce 10 million births to a few moments, as evidenced, is obvious. One evidence of that is Mukunda, who's, when he was very eager, when all the devotees were one by one getting benedictions from Lord Chaitanya during the Shataprahaya Bhava, the Mahaprakash Leela, and he was calling them one by one and giving benedictions to them, and Mukunda was waiting very patiently to be called. And as we know, Lord Chaitanya didn't call him. And then one devotee, I believe it was Srivas, was asking on behalf of Mukunda. He was concerned. Your devotee Mukunda is here waiting. You have not called him. Certainly he's very dear to you. Why have we not called him? And Lord Chaitanya says, oh, that Mukunda, I will not call him. He behaves like a devotee in our association, but he also associates with the impersonalists. Therefore, he's just like a person. In one hand, he carries a lotus flower. In the other hand, he carries a club to beat me. And he says, therefore, I will not call him before me. And then Mukunda asks Srivas, well, ask him, when will I get his mercy? When will I be able to see him again? And Lord Chaitanya said, he will see me again after 10 million births. But he had such faith that he would get that mercy, because the only thing is he wanted was, he knows, I'll get that mercy. Lord Chaitanya said, mercy will get, I will get 10 million births. What difference does it make? I'll get that mercy and I will see him again. So he became so ecstatic that he began dancing. I will see, I will see. And of course, Lord Chaitanya, understanding his heart and understanding his firm faith in his words, he reduced 10 million births to a few moments and said, call Mukunda. So that, of course, someone would say that's a real severe test. 10 million births? I don't know if I can be so patient. We may immediately become scared and say, I don't know if I'm going to do this, like struggle like this for 10 million births. But actually, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, patience means that I'll get Krishna's mercy now, 10 years, 100 years, or in some future birth. I will never give up his lotus feet. That patience, he says, that is essential. That is required for devotional service, to obtain the Lord's pleasure. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about when a devotee is impatient, he can't do this internal work. And sometimes, he says, persons will give up their prolonged sadhana, being impatient. They may fall from the path. So, there's another interesting point that he makes here about those, when he says those who are impatient cannot do any work. And he says, by the quality of daya, patience, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. And it quotes the first verse of Sri Upadeshamrita. In the first verse of Sri Upadeshamrita, the symptoms of daya or patience are explained. First verse, Upadeshamrita. Anybody know the verse? Vachovegam, Manakasakura Vegam. Yes. Udarapasta. This is the symptoms of patience. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, which is the topic we're going to speak about, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that by the quality of patience, a practitioner first learns to control himself, and then he can control the world. Sometimes persons, they think that who are impatient, they think, let me control the world and then I'll control myself. Some people sometimes even, they call it preaching. They think, they can call it many things. They see things that are wrong and they think, yes, let me correct everything that's wrong. And they see all those things that are wrong because they're unable to look within themselves and see that the same thing is within their own hearts. But it's easier to point it out. And Bhaktivinoda talks about this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about this when he speaks about the urge to speak. He talks about this characteristic, which I'll get to. But he said, as we understand that, he's saying that first, a person has to learn to control himself, and then, when he learns to control himself, he can control others. Or, as he says, he controls the whole world. There is an interesting story in this connection about our Prayojana Acharya Raghunath Das Goswami. And it helps to illustrate this and actually really get a sense of what Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is speaking about here. So, as we know, Raghunath Das is a child. He was the son of a very wealthy landowner, Govardhan Majumdar. And he was the only child. And as we all know from Chaitanya Charitamrita, his father was very much attached to seeing that his son had all the comforts of life. And he was very concerned that his son would be very happy to live with opulence, comforts, and experience the same pleasures that he himself experienced. Although we know Govardhan Majumdar is a Vaishnava, but Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says he was a Vaishnava praya. He is almost a Vaishnava. He was not a pure Vaishnava. And therefore, and although he was learned, and although he was very charitable, and he was also very favorably disposed towards saintly persons, he had a strong attachment to his son. And he wanted the best for him, all comforts. So the family priest, his name was Balaramacharya, and he was also, Balaramacharya was a disciple of Haridas Thakur. And one time, Haridas Thakur, he was staying in the home of Balaramacharya. As we all know, Raghunath Das, one of the blessings he got to become the great Vaishnava and a servant of Lord Chaitanya was the blessings he received from Haridas Thakur. And his father, Govardhan, actually requested Balaramacharya to take Raghunath Das to get those blessings. And he was, he sent him along with all of the guards that always accompanied Raghunath Das everywhere and servants that accompanied Raghunath Das everywhere. And he sent also a very large cart filled with all kinds of gifts to attract Haridas Thakur. He was thinking that as soon as Haridas Thakur sees these wonderful gifts I've offered, certainly he'll give a great benediction to my son. So, on the request of Govardhan, he brought Raghunath Das to Haridas Thakur and introduced him, presented the gifts, but of course Haridas Thakur was not very much interested, not controlled by these things. A person who can't control themselves thinks, oh, look at these gifts. If I want these gifts, maybe I better give a blessing that will be pleasing to Govardhan. Because he's attracted to the gifts, attracted to the wealth, to the opulence. So Balaramacharya introduced Raghunath Das to Haridas Thakur and said, here is Raghunath Das, he's been sent by his father Govardhan, and he's asked that you give him a blessing. Now of course Balaramacharya understood that Haridas Thakur wasn't going to necessarily give the kind of blessing that Govardhan was expecting. And Haridas Thakur gave Raghunath the blessing. He said, I give you the blessing that you will renounce the whole world. But Balaramacharya made a loud sound when he gave it, so nobody heard it. And when he returned and brought Raghunath Das, immediately Govardhan asked the guards, so Haridas Thakur gave my son blessing? And the guard said, I think so, but we didn't hear it. And he asked servants, he gave a blessing? Yes, yeah, seems like it, but we didn't hear what he said. So he had to go to Balaramacharya. So he asked Balaramacharya, so Haridas Thakur gave my son a blessing? And Balaramacharya said, yes, he gave him a blessing. What blessing did he give him? He said, he gave your son the blessing that he will control the whole world. And Govardhan was merely, control the whole world? I control this whole tract of land, and my son's going to control the whole world. But there was a hidden meaning in his words. The hidden meaning in his words were, because Raghunath Das received the benediction to renounce the whole world, it means that nothing in this world would be able to control him. Nothing in this world. So he controlled the world. Because why? Because although there are so many allurements which this world has to offer, many of them, and if we don't first control ourselves, then we can become very much controlled by the allurements and compromised. Completely compromised, because I'm attracted to these things. I'm attached. They still have these things in my heart. So we may think, oh yes, I'm independent. I'm not under anyone's control. I have wealth, I have knowledge, or whatever it may be, to think ourselves to be independent. But actually, as long as we've not learned to control ourselves, which is the work that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that one has to be patient in executing. He says patience means, this verse, vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara pasta, means learning how to control. Or as the verse says, learning how to tolerate. We may not be able to fully control, but at least we have to learn how to tolerate these urges. Because these urges, they're very powerful and difficult to control. As the evidence is given in so many examples in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Even Arjuna, he says that these senses are very difficult to control. Trying to control them is like trying to control the wind. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that the practitioner of devotional service first controls first himself and then the whole world. So he learns first how to tolerate these urges. And in endeavoring to tolerate these urges, he has to be patient. But what does patience mean? Does it mean that we just wait? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually gives a very brilliant definition of how to be patient. It's not that we simply wait. Yes, we wait patiently to get the mercy, but still we have to make some endeavor. We have to make some effort ourselves. And by making that effort, patiently waiting to get the mercy, that gradually one may become a candidate or a qualified recipient for that mercy. And the Lord, when he becomes pleased, obviously when the Lord is pleased, then the devotee has everything. Not only does he have it tolerate the urges of the mind and the senses and the urge to speak, but Krishna, who is Hrishikesh, the master of the senses, Savopareva Niyamaktam Tat Paratvena Niyamalam Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhaktira Uchite. Is it Uchite? Uchite, yes. Rupa Goswami says that devotional service means engaging the senses in the service of Hrishikesh, the master of the senses. And one engages the senses in the service of Hrishikesh, then there are two byproducts that come. There's one, Savopadivinyamuktam. One becomes freed from false designations and his senses become controlled. Or as Lord Chaitanya, or Prabodhananda, excuse me, Saraswati describes in his prayer, that he says the venomous, if one who gets the merciful glance of Lord Chaitanya, anyone who receives the merciful glance of Lord Chaitanya, once getting that mercy, then the venomous serpents of the senses become like serpents with broken fangs. They no longer have any poisonous effect. Of course, he also says, kaivalya narakayate, that impersonal liberation is, for him, is like going to hell. and the planets, heavenly planets, phantasmagoria, and the positions of the demigods to become like insignificant insects, and Vishvam Purna Sukhayate, the whole universe becomes joyful by one merciful glance of the Lord. So not only when one gets that mercy from the Lord does one's senses become controlled, but of course we know that that merciful glance is such that the pleasure one experiences from that, by the mercy of the Lord, is so far superior that automatically the senses become controlled. The Lord is very much inclined to give that pleasure, bhajaniya paramasukha matrasasukadvam, to the degree that the Lord is pleased, to that degree he gives pleasure. We get pleasure. Or as is explained in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that devotion, direct experience of the Lord, and detachment from material things, these three things come simultaneously for a person engaged in devotional service, just as pleasure, nourishment, and relief from hunger come simultaneously and increasingly with each bite for a person who's engaged in eating. So a devotee knows he's advancing because he's experiencing his devotion is increasing, gets direct experience of the Lord, experiences the mercy of the Lord in his life. He sees, gets direct experience of how these things could not possibly manifest if it wasn't for the mercy of my spiritual master, if it wasn't for the mercy of the Lord. He gets direct experience in his life. And he sees that he becomes detached from material things. Just as a person who's eating sees that his hunger is going away, he's getting some pleasure from his food that he's eating, and he's getting some strength. So this is the characteristic of making progress in the path of devotional service and actually gradually awakening the Lord's pleasure. So therefore, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying here that this first verse of Upadeshamrita, Vacho Vegam Manasa Krodha Vegam, describes the symptoms of dhaya or patience. That a person has to be patient while he endeavors to tolerate these urges of six urges. Now, with that introduction, we're going to speak about what one should do in order to tolerate the urge to speak. Because it's a very powerful urge, the urge to speak. And oftentimes, if we don't tolerate that urge, we may say something we may later regret. And there's usually, when we have this urge to speak and it's not controlled, it's usually focused on a particular topic. And there's a reason why it's focused on a particular topic. It's usually focused on talking about others. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to address that. So I'll read that and then we'll discuss. He says there are six types of urges, namely the urges of the speech, mind, anger, belly, tongue, and genitals. With a desire to speak more, a person becomes talkative. That's a sentence I tried to understand what's being said here. It sounds obviously for the person who speaks more, he becomes talkative. I'm questioning the translation, but anyways. With a desire to speak more, a person becomes talkative. If speech is not regulated, then enmity arises from talking about others. Now it needs to be expanded upon. And he expands upon it here, and he also expands upon it elsewhere in another essay. But he says that if one does not control or tolerate this urge to speak, if it's not regulated, then what happens? The tendency is to speak about others. And then what happens when we start speaking about others? Enmity is created. Now first we should understand that speaking about others is very natural. Radhanath Maharaj and we were just, before I came in here, we were sitting and reading Krishna book. And we were reading the chapter, the gopis are attracted by Krishna's flute. And in that chapter, we heard conversations between the gopis. They were speaking about somebody else too. Because it's natural. Usually, not usually, all the time. It was devotees. There was another verse I looked up. It's a verse in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. It's Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami, where he says, Paramahansas, devotees who have accepted the essence of life, are attached to Lord Krishna, attached to Krishna within the core of their hearts, and he is the aim of their life. It is their nature to speak about Krishna at every moment, as if such topics were newer and newer. They constantly speak about such topics. They are attracted to speak about such topics spontaneously, in the same way as materialists are attracted to speak about women and sex. So Shukadeva Goswami says that actually Paramahansas, devotees who accepted Krishna within the core of their hearts and who accepted the essence of life, therefore, because Krishna is the aim of their life, what do? Because Krishna is within their hearts and is always the aim of everything that they do, they're always talking about others. But it just so happens to be, it's about Krishna. And the gopis were saying things like, what, you can maybe remember some of the things the gopis were saying, Maharaj? They were speaking about, the bamboo flute. They were very envious of the bamboo flute because they were thinking that Krishna's lips belong to us. And how is it that Krishna is sharing his lips with the bamboo flute? They're our possession. Nobody else has the right. And they began to think, just how fortunate the parents of that bamboo flute must be. And they started talking about the parents of the bamboo flute. That bamboo, their parents, they're getting the opportunity. They've given birth to this bamboo who's somehow getting to taste the nectar from Krishna's lips. Then the gopis also began talking about Krishna when they were seeing that the deer had the opportunity to go and to approach Krishna very closely, and they were also feeling envious. Because the deer were able to closely approach Krishna, they were saying, and their husbands were with them. And they could get close to Krishna along with their husbands. We're envious. Our husbands won't even allow us to get close to Krishna. They'll never come with us. So they're speaking in this way. And there's so many examples we can find in the Bhagavatam. When Uddhava came to Vrindavan, you know, the gopis had some things to say about Krishna. Who is this Krishna? Where is he? What has he done? And he said he's just like the bee comes and takes nectar from the flower and then leaves the flower and then abandons it. This Krishna, he's come, he's stolen the nectar from our hearts, and he's gone off and left us, abandoned us. And gopis are speaking about, they can't stop speaking about Krishna. So, the gopis are speaking this way. Paramahansas, who've accepted Krishna within the core of their heart, and it was the aim of their life, they're always speaking about the topics about Krishna as if such topics are newer and newer at every moment. So they're speaking about somebody else. So to speak about somebody else is natural for the soul. But when that natural propensity to speak about somebody else is perverted to be reflected, and we don't have that spontaneous attraction to speak about Krishna, as described in the Bhagavatam, that spontaneous, prayena muniyo rajan nivrtivitasevata, nagunyastaramantes nagunanu kantane hari, the topmost transcendentalists, right? They derive great pleasure always discussing topics about Krishna. That is their pleasure. That is their satisfaction. And much chitamagata pranabodhyakta parasparam. Krishna says himself, the devotees derive great pleasure discussing topics about me. They're spontaneously attracted. Why? Because Krishna is there within the core of their hearts. He is the aim of their life. And therefore, everything they think of, everything they see, awakens within them the desire to speak about Krishna or Krishna's devotees, obviously. And therefore, Sukadeva Goswami says, materialists, we can all relate to this. What do they have? What are they always meditating within the core of their hearts? So when somebody's always meditating on these things within the core of their hearts, such as women and sex, then it's also very spontaneous for them to speak whenever they see a catalyst. Why? Because what's in their heart, one will begin to speak about. So, for the practitioner of devotional service, he always has to aspire to keep the aim, the goal, Krishna, within his heart. And therefore, of course, we may say the best way to control the urges to speak is just to always speak about Krishna. That's what the Vaishnava Acharyas say. But it's not so easy. It's not so easy. Sometimes we find ourselves speaking about others, or sometimes we find ourselves in the course of our daily work having to speak about others. And therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to tell us how we can speak about others without creating enmity, without being sinful, and at the same time tolerate the urge to speak. Because if we don't tolerate this urge, and we begin speaking about others unnecessarily, then what happens? Because the tendency is that as soon as we get to somebody, we always have something we want to tell somebody, you know. And usually we'll read, it's not always, unfortunately, the best things to tell, because the tendency is that we fail to recognize the good things, and instead of when we get together with others, rather than glorifying the good things that we see in devotees, we might say something without tolerating the urge to speak. We might say something that we really don't need to say. And if we say it, what happens is that we all know, you know, what comes around, goes around, comes around. Usually it comes back and says, oh, he said that about me? I'm laughing because I was just having a conversation with a devotee in Moscow the other day. And the word for temple in Russian is chram. So I told him that I had to go to the temple, and there were so many things I had to hear. So I said, yes, when you go to the temple, there's so much chramyakata. It's chramyakata. The word is chramyakata. It means village talk, but I called it chramyakata, which means temple talk. When we come to the temple, sometimes the devotees engage in chramyakata. When you come to the temple and utilize the temple as a place to talk. And if we're not careful, we may talk unnecessarily about others. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he'll specifically, and as we said, if we don't control that urge or tolerate that urge to speak about others, then he says enmity is created. Enmity is created because you say something unnecessarily about others, it gets back to that person, and then of course you start thinking about who knows about what I said and who doesn't know what I said, and you have to start distinguish between who knows and who doesn't know, and then when you don't know who knows and who doesn't know, it becomes very fusing, and then you might approach somebody who you think knows but doesn't know. And you know, and the result is, if one doesn't control this tendency, what happens is that the very nature of loving exchanges, which Rupa Goswami speaks about in Upadeshamrita, the dati pratigrinati guyamakyati pichati, he says, what are the nature of loving exchanges between devotees? Two of the most important loving exchanges is to inquire confidentially and to reveal one's mind in confidence. But if devotees don't learn to tolerate the urge to speak, and they see that every time I say something in confidence, it comes back to me, then what happens? Nobody wants to reveal their mind in confidence. They're thinking, how can they have confidential relationships? And actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that this is an envious culture. It's not Vaishnava culture. An envious culture is to speak unnecessarily, to talk about others unnecessarily. Actually, and we're going to read it right now, he says that sometimes people speak about others out of envy. He says here, I'm going to have to end soon, but there's more. This is going to continue I'll just read this, and then maybe I should leave a little time. This was supposed to end by 9 o'clock. Maybe we can leave a little time for questions. Yes? Okay. He says, talking without reason about other people is extremely adverse to devotional service. Many people talk about others to establish their own reputation. Being envious, some people are accustomed to discuss others' character. The minds of those who are busy in such topics can never be fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. So, here it is. We're saying that the whole goal of a sadhana is to be able to fix the mind on the lotus feet of Krishna and actually to manmana bhava mad bhakto majim nam namaskuru, to always think of him, remember him, offer obeisances to him. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the persons who are always engaged in such topics, their minds can never be fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. There's a lot I could speak on this subject. There are a lot of references. So I'd rather continue on this topic tomorrow, and we'll elaborate on a little bit more, reading from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because we're going to actually get in, because all of you should anticipate some relief that if we can't talk about others at all, how the heck are we going to... how do I live? So he's going to actually explain how to be patient, how we can talk about others in a sinless way, not be implicated, and of course always being very careful to look within our own hearts to make sure that envy, pride, or the trappings that will force us to speak in an unnecessary way are not manifest, are not present in our hearts. He'll speak about that. And that's tomorrow's topic. So maybe I can stop here, and then if anybody has any questions about anything we've talked about up until now, we can take them. And if there's something that I'm going to address tomorrow, I might say wait till tomorrow. But does anyone have any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned very nicely that many of us are not that Krishna conscious, that we can talk about Krishna all the time. So in this sense, we can very easily get into the trap of being very, maybe even getting introverted, or the spontaneity can get leave the relationships.
Spontaneity can leave relationships?
Leave the relationships. Because we become very careful when we're in relationships, what to say and what not to say and what to do. So how do we act like normal human beings and at the same time come to the level where we will not make offenses or we will keep the etiquette?
Bhaktivinoda Thakur says something very interesting. I'll read that first. He said, the practitioners of devotional service should not speak unnecessarily. If you do have to speak unnecessarily, better to keep quiet. I'm just reading what's... So you may say, that's a bit artificial, isn't it? But then he's going to talk about different provisions that are given, like the rishis, how have given provisions for Monavrata. And he's saying that, you know, some people who just can't be spontaneously attracted to speak about Krishna, better they observe Monavrata. Because at least that's the pious thing to do. But of course, it's not the goal. As we know, that because topics of Krishna are so attractive, that therefore, they're so attractive that devotees who are attached to speaking about Krishna, they can't control the urge to speak in a positive way. And so, in fact, there is a verse in the Bhagavatam that says that Narada Muni also says that devotees, in the place where pure devotees meet, following the rules and regulations, in that place, he says, their topics about Krishna flow like the continuous waves of a river. And if one gets the opportunity to be in that place, then one will forget about all the necessities of life, such as hunger and thirst, and one will become free from all kinds of illusion, lamentation, and fear. So he says that natural is like a flow of the river. Anybody who knows when the rivers get high and they flood, they carry everything. Or a tsunami, anything gets caught, they just get caught right in it and they move. Right? In the same way, Narada Muni is giving an example. If you get caught in their flow, then what happens is that you'll forget about the necessities of life, such as hunger and thirst, and become free from illusion, lamentation, and fear. So, of course, one way to develop an attraction is to associate with those devotees who have an attraction. Because if you get caught in their flow of nectar, it'll become so attractive that you'll actually begin to experience some pleasure from that. Not only pleasure, but as Narada Muni says, you'll stop thinking, you won't even think about hunger and thirst. What to speak of temporarily, and of course, to become free from illusion, lamentation, and fear, but it may happen for some period of time. You might sit and you might hear, and hunger and thirst you don't think about, illusion, lamentation, and fear you don't think about, and then as soon as you leave that association, and your only association you have is your mind, and all of a sudden you start thinking about hunger and thirst, and you start experiencing illusion, lamentation, and fear. So, having experienced that, then that is an impetus to not fall into the trap of speaking unnecessarily about others, and utilizing the opportunity in the association of other devotees to speak about topics which are relevant about spiritual life. But unless we actually have that association, that association which awakens within us that desire, Shushusho Shradhanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi, Sian Mahat Seva Yavipra Punyatirta Nishevanat. By serving those devotees who are freed from vice, great service is done. And by that service, what happens is one develops an affinity for hearing and chanting about Krishna. So we should accept the positive that maybe I'm not spontaneously attracted to speaking, but at least I should seek out the association of those who do. And Queen, who is it? Lord Kapila Dev says to Devahuti, Madashriya Kata Mishta Shunvanti Katayanticha Tapanti Vivadastapa Naita Mangachitetasa Taete Sarava Sarvi Sava Sangha Vivarjita Sangatesha. No, Sangatesha Sepatya Sangandosha Harahite. He says, engaged constantly in hearing and chanting about me, sadhus don't suffer from material miseries because they're filled with thoughts of my activities and pastimes. Oh, my mother, O virtuous lady, you have to seek out the association of such devotees and become attached to them, because when you become attached to them, it will counteract the pernicious effects of your material attachments. So we accept the positive. Well, let's look for the association of those devotees who do have an attraction, and let's sit and hear from them. And be careful to not fall into the trap of us, because sometimes the tendency is we associate with people who are... We should learn how to associate with people according to various degrees. Like, I think it was Narada Muni who said to Prahlad Maharaj in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, when we're in the association of a superior devotee, we should faithfully serve them and see to their comforts. When we should, instead of being envious of them, Prabhupada says in the commentary, he says, when your association with a person who's less advanced than oneself, he said, one should be careful not to deride them, because that's a tendency, to deride a person who's less advanced. And instead, one should be compassionate and try to help him become Krishna conscious. And he says, when one is in the association of equals, he says, instead of being competitive with them, one should make friends with them. Making friends, according to Rupa Goswami, means tadati patigrinati guhya makyati pachyati bhungte bojhaya chaiva. Right? Making friends means speaking confidential subject matters. Confidential means that sometimes we think speaking confidentially means I'm going to tell you something confidentially what I think about this other devotee. No, confidential means, you know, what's something that's relevant to our heart, you know? Confidential. Of course, sometimes we may confidentially speak something to a non-envious person about what we may perceive in another devotee, and we want to see if our hearts are actually in the right place, and we want to make sure it's not born of envy that I see this. So we may approach a more advanced Vaishnava and say, can you please tell me, am I envious, or is... And then an advanced devotee, because he's freed from envy, he knows how to deal with that. He knows it's been spoken confidentially. It's not that he just immediately posts it on the internet, which is of course, you know, to make such a statement, I know, is not politically correct, but because usually that's what we think, is that, yes, as soon as I hear something confidential, I should immediately post it on the internet and tell the world. And this is not Vaishnava culture. So we should confidentially speak and reveal our hearts and hear from them about this is friendship. So these are all very relevant instructions about how to associate and how to make friends with devotees on the proper platform. Okay, I think maybe we should stop here and then we can continue tomorrow. And thank you very much, Hare Krishna.